with human movement, and that's what dance is about. And I wasn't too sure what to think about it when I received the invitation, but I, you know, that I think I was going to go see some kind of dance performance that night anyways, because if it wasn't that, there would have been another kind of interesting Filipino performance. Mm-hmm. But like, it was kind of, I really enjoyed it. And then obviously it had a good reception afterwards. And it was lovely, you know, like talking to him, you know, his life story is just so inspiring, right? Imagine going, you know, to another province, going to Toronto, a completely different place where you didn't really speak the language, learning to be a ballerina, becoming a successful ballerina, classical ballerina, you know, dancing at places like the Bolshoi, and then in your 30s deciding to become a choreographer. And that's how he ended up starting his own dance company. And his own dance company that put on the show called Côté Danse. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing more shows in the future based on other literature and based on other myth as well. So
was this a touring production?
So this particular production...
Where's he based now?
I think he's based most of the time in Toronto.
Right.
I just looked on the internet just a few minutes ago. I think there are some performances in Toronto in like July or whatever. So this is definitely a touring production.
Yeah.
But the specific tour segment in Lower Mainland, it was this weekend, because it was Friday, Saturday at the Vancouver Playhouse, and then Sunday, yesterday, it was, I think, somewhere in Fraser Valley. I think it was like Chilliwack or Abbotsford.
Yep.
And that was the West Coast segment of this. And then they move on, and then they go somewhere else. But that's I was talking to him about this. I was like, you know, like, Guillaume, again, not pronouncing the name correctly, Guillaume. I was like, you know, being a professional artist, I know being a professional performing an artist is incredibly exhausting. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. It's imagine being a ballerina, right? But the wonderful thing about this is that it's like the Cirque du Soleil. And, you know, he was like, I was talking about this as well. Like, when you go to, like, go see the Cirque du Soleil, everyone goes to see the Cirque du Soleil. But most of Cirque du Soleil actually is dance. And so it's a very universal thing. And, you know, this idea of a dance troupe coming to town and putting on a really good show, I think that's a concept that's as old as time. So, but in this case, I think they've done a beautiful job of it, and they've kept it. I think something where the professional quality is really high. So there's a lot there for both kind of long time viewers as well as kind of new beginners to the art, because they've kept it at an hour long as well, which is, you know, for people who go to like classical music, you know, 3 hour operas. Great relief. So I was very appreciative of the whole thing. It was very nice.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a great production and a great performance. Hopefully they'll be coming back again soon.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will be coming up with new and really creative ways of doing dance. And I think that's going to be something I want to find out.
Excellent. Thank you for that review, Stephen.
A pleasure.
Excellent. So, in upcoming concerts, 80s and 90s indie rock veterans, the Violent Femmes, are coming back to town in May, playing here in Vancouver on May 4th and 5th. Tickets are still available for that one, and you can get those online. This is one of their, I don't know if you'd call them hits, because although they're a relatively well-known band now, at the time they were very underground. But this is Blister in the Sun from the Violent Femmes.
Just might stop to check you out. Let me go wild. dressed up and I'm so strung out. I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out. When I'm a walking, I strut my stuff and I'm so strung out. I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out. Body and beats, I stain my sheets, I don't even know why. My girlfriend, she's at the end, she is starting to cry. When I'm walking, strong, I stop again, I'm so strung out. I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out. Let me go on.
The Violent Femmes and Blister in the Sun. That's from that was from their debut album, probably about 1985. They're coming back to Vancouver to play here on May 4th and 5th. You can get your tickets online. So Brian Mulroney passed away about a week and a half ago.
And, you know, CBC Radio on Saturday morning, they printed, but they preempted programming for the funeral and all this.
It was broadcast live on television.
So we're
going to
tell what the truth was about him, and it's not good.
One of the things that, ever since he passed away, it's been sort of a nonstop love fest for Brian Mulroney. And, you know, like I think any politician, he, you know, definitely did a lot of good.
I don't know about.
We'll get to that.
The good could have been done by Joe Clark just as well. I mean, 1993 election, Progressive Conservatives only had two seats.
Yep.
I don't think Justin Trudeau is going to do that badly in 2025.
Yeah, he was definitely a controversial figure and very polarizing. Both during his premiership, but also afterwards with some of his stuff. So you're going to talk a bit about that there, Peter.
Yes, I'm. Okay, the Airbus affair. Maybe Magnus, you can help me out here. I got the Wikipedia on it, but maybe you can but you heard about that.
Yes.
One.
Yep.
So maybe you can say it in a more colloquial sense than Wikipedia could. If you fail,
the Airbus affair was something that Brian Mulroney got involved with after leaving politics.
Okay, I'm going to read the first sentence. The Airbus affair refers to allegations of secret commissions paid to Prime Minister Brian Mulroney and other members of his ministry in exchange for then Crown Corporation Air Canada's purchase of a large number of Airbus jets, which is a bit of a technical thing. But he got cash in an envelope, I think like $300,000.
Yeah, it was like $250,000 or something like that.
Yes, and that he didn't pay taxation, and he said, oh, I didn't get this. And I mean, it was bad. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad.
And that was just, you know, I mean, that was one thing that he got up to, and it was quite an embarrassment for him, and more so than an embarrassment, because it seems like very suspect and criminal sort of activity. You know, Karl-Heinz Schreibner
was
the guy he was working with who handed him an envelope full of cash.
During the prime ministership of Brian Mulroney, there was a person called Glenn Keeley.
Yeah.
And he wanted to have a project happening in Hull, Quebec, I think.
Yeah.
And he was told point blank by a minister or a member of parliament, whatever, he had to pay something to let the project go by. And he sort of, he wasn't a crank. Some people saw him because he had, House of Parliament was his thing about corruption. But regularly expected of MPs. They would get kickbacks and everything. during that period. It was not good. And do you know that the Conservative Party right now, and from a legal technical term, mm-hmm. is not the Progressive Conservative Party? Now, the Kim Campbell is basically the last prime minister of what was first called Conservative, then the Progressive Conservative Party. So that goes back to John A. Macdonald.
Yeah.
And sometime, I don't know exactly when, they changed the name to Progressive Conservative, but that was the legal entity that goes back to John A. Macdonald.
Yeah, I think it was actually in the 1920s they became the Progressive Conservatives.
Yes, thank you.
Because I think in one of those sort of, that happens from time to time, you know, the political sort of stuff on the right side sort of split off, and there were like two parties on the right trying to compete against the liberals, which never works out because you split your vote and you are always going to lose to the party that's got a solid sort of chunk of the spectrum, in which the liberals, you know, they sit on the center of the spectrum. And eventually the two parties fuse, the Progressive Party and the Conservative Party become the Progressive Conservatives.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is that it goes back to John A. Macdonald.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was what happened was that after the 1993 election, it was the Bloc Québécois was the opposition, right? And then in 1996 or 7, that election, that was the REMA Foreign Party was the opposition, was Preston Manning, who I met at the Vancouver Institute of all things when he went.
Yeah, and then eventually, you know,
they had alliance and
The Progressive Conservatives were still around, but only sort of electing a few candidates. But still, it was a problematic because it split the right side vote.
There was,
and eventually the Conservative Party, well, the Reform Party became the Canadian Alliance Party, and then they did this a merger, but really a takeover of the Reform Alliance Party, took over the Progressive Conservatives and renamed themselves the Conservatives, which is the party we have today.
Yeah. Do you know about David Orchard? Have you heard the name?
Yeah, I remember him. I forget the details.
David Orchard in the 90s was really against NAFTA. And he attempted to be leader of the Progressive Conservatives. And he was, and Joe Clark won at one. That's about 1998.
Yeah.
And he failed. But anyway, that was his idea to remake. But anyway, that happened.
All right.
Now, Stevie Cameron, I don't think she's ever been. He was on the Fifth Estate,
mm-hmm.
as one of the journalists, quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read a bit from the back cover here. I think it's, we're not saying anything like the National Enquirer. Okay, just one sentence there. Her spellbounding account of 9 years of political corruption uncovers a cast of shrewd opportunists, freelance rogues, and thieves in high places, whose connections stretch from the offices of the Prime Minister to the dens of organized crime. Now that's from the book flap of On the Take, 1994, by Stevie Cameron, who I think she was in the Fifth Estate early 1990s. So I don't think anybody's ever said, oh, Stevie, you went crazy or anything. So, it's kind of a it wasn't good. Don't believe this stuff you're hearing. Have you got anything else to add here?
Well, I think Stephen had something he wanted to add in there.
The other Stevie. Okay.
Yeah. I'm the other Stephen. The Stephen in the house. I want to say something here, which is that Brian Mulroney reminds me, and I really don't want people to take this the wrong way. Like Brian Mulroney reminds me of a lot of American politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Including Joe Biden, not because they're Irish. It's a clientelist kind of politician, in the sense that like Brian Mulroney kind of had this air of essentially, like if you're his friend, he would do anything for you, and if you weren't his friend, you know, too bad. And he was a good man. Like, mm-hmm. overall, on the balance, he was a good man, but...
Stevie, I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, all right, look, you know, let's speak well of whatever. I liked him. He's a very likable person.
And I think that's like the main thing. But ultimately, it was kind of a clientelous kind of patronage kind of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of every government. It's true of the current government. It's true of Stephen Harper. It's true of everyone. But I think for some people, it's a little bit more true, and it comes a little bit more naturally. And I think that's all there is to it. No, yeah. Like, I don't think he had evil intent. Or anything.
I think he did have evil intent, in my editorial opinion. And I think he was out for the cash in every level. And he was a sweet talker. He even talked you into liking the guy. Anyway, oh, there's actually... how the book begins is at the end when he leaves. It's a little anecdotal story. I'll kind of paraphrase it. So yeah. He leaves. Where's the resident of the prime minister? Whatever it was. So they got all the staff there, and he's about to go, and he says, "I'm only a phone call away." So then one of the staff says, "Oh, what is the exact phone number?" Because it's just something he says, you know, I'm just a phone call away. And they said, well, what exactly is the phone number, sir? And he said, oh, just a phone call away. Look down to the ground when he goes over. And supposedly that the car was leaving and it snagged. And the thing was, the staff wanted a bit of a break. They knew that Kim Campbell was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping for a day break, which they weren't going to get.
Yeah.
But then... the car left, and then it snagged. And then they were saying, is he coming back? Did he forget something? And after a bit, one of the maids says, and don't come back. She was so angry about how they were treated in general. So, and now the other Stevie left because he doesn't want to. I don't. One of the...
he's yeah. Well, one thing I will say about Brian Mulroney is he probably... as prime minister, stayed just a little too long. Because he was quite unpopular for, you know, I mean, he won...
1988.
Two majority governments,
yeah.
Including his first one was the biggest in Canadian history at that time, and I think still so.
And he had the biggest loss, if you count Kim Campbell.
Well, this is where he made a mistake, because, in the wake of, the GST and... the free trade agreement and the various constitutional stuff, he'd become very unpopular. And he really, as I think many politicians do, they kind of hang on too long and they don't step aside with enough time for their successor to establish their own identity. You know, when it come to, Kim Campbell, I can't remember the exact time frame, but it was really, she didn't have a lot of time to establish herself as leader of the party before they had to have an election. And part of the result part of the result of that is, of course, they got absolutely crushed in that election and only elected two MPs. I'm going to let Stephen go first.
But I'd like to say something else about
that. This is why I love, Pierre Trudeau, because Pierre Trudeau is in many ways both that and also the opposite. Because, the great sort of moan, the great complaint about Pierre Trudeau for most of the time he was prime minister in the 70s was that he just took forever and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And, he did three terms where he just, philosophized and did absolutely nothing. And then he got defeated in 79 by Joe Clark. And he was out of office for like 6 months and then came roaring back just in time for the Quebec referendum in 1980 and then did the constitution repatriation in 82. And so he did everything in his last term when he was already should have been out of power. He was officially retired, unretired, came back again for one last term. And then, most politicians are kind of like, let's do big things in the first or second terms and then runs out of steam. It just drags on. Kind of that was kind of like with John Kerchen as well. And same thing with the late one. That's why Pierre Trudeau was so hilarious. He did three terms, sat around, and was out of power. He's like, oh, well, too bad. I retire now. And then people are like, no, you have one more term. And he did everything in one term.
And left office, like Brian Mulroney, very unpopular, and John Turner, who came in to replace them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Again, didn't have that much time, although he'd been waiting in the wings forever, that much time to establish a new identity.
I think John Turner was doomed anyways. I think John Turner, like, this is a sort of a controversial take in terms of among historians or whatever, I'm sure. But, like, I think John Turner was doomed by personality. He was additionally doomed by the timing of his succession to Pierre Trudeau. But his personality was not suited to kind of the very combative politics of 70s, 80s Canada, right? Yep.
And, you know, I mean, the same thing happened to, what was...
Paul Martin
with John Cretchen.
Well, I don't dislike Pierre Trudeau as much as I dislike Brian Mulroney, but I still dislike Pierre Trudeau. But I want to say something about the 1993 election that is, I think, important. What happened was that the Progressive Conservatives ran an ad about how Jean Chrétien looked because he had Bell's palsy, which I had about 2 years ago, by the way. But he had it as a youth. And he never recovered from it. That's why he has a bit of a paralyzed face. Mm-hmm. And the Progressive Conservatives, I don't even think it was Kim Campbell's idea. It was her people. But they ran it saying, do you want this to be the face of Canada? And I think that really pounced it. That was something maybe you forgot, Magnus, that was controversial.
I remember that now, yeah.
And that gave him two seats at the end.
I don't think anyone's going to win trying to do a fist fight with John Chrétien. So, you know, the author of the Shawinigan Handshake. So there you go.
It was a bit more than that. It was making fun of how somebody looks.
I know. Yeah. It's just kind of like, you don't want to do gutter politics with John Chrétien. You're not going to win. Like, it's just, it's one of these things. He's gonna be the last one standing no matter what.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is, of course, down in the States, Donald Trump, it's always doing stuff like that. I mean, half his rhetoric is around insulting people, including making fun of people with disabilities. And oddly enough, it doesn't seem to hurt him.
Well, Kim Campbell was no Donald Trump.
No, definitely not. Go ahead, Stephen.
I was going to say that, you know, Donald Trump is a very cruel man in many ways. But, like, it's, you know, like, sometimes it's hard to distinguish his verbal cruelty from the policy cruelty of some of his rivals, like Nikki Haley. I mean, like, Nikki Haley or whoever proposing to take school lunches away, how is that possibly more cruel in substance than whatever Donald Trump? I mean, sure, it looks more cruel. You know, he's on stage mocking someone, but here's guys taking school lunches away from kids. I mean, that seems worse to me, right? So I don't know. I'm not American, so it's hard for me to judge this. But a lot of the times people are like, oh, he's uncivilized. Well, I'm just like, what's a civilized way of taking school lunches away from kids?
Well, I mean, the whole Republican Party is uncivilized, and he's just it's only gotten worse with him as the face and leader of that party.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, what their whole platform seems to be, taking school lunches away, denying women the right to control their own bodies, election, you know, I mean, they complain all the time about election stuff, but they're the ones who are like suppressing voters and gerrymandering districts and a whole lot of other stuff, you know, which is basically how they're able to remain competitive. Not through appealing to having policies that appeal to voters, but, you know, through a combination of rage talking and election manipulation through things like voter suppression and gerrymandering.
Yeah, I think it's also the false sanctimony that gets me, right? Kind of like, it's, remember during Hurricane Katrina, there was this mega church pastor who apparently has private jets and, you know, like, stuff that was in his really nice building, and he didn't want to open it to any of the people who were fleeing the natural disaster. And I think a lot of the times, you know, people who are like, oh, we're so high and mighty, we're so moral, and then they take all these measures. I don't view them as being any better than Trump. I find it sometimes hard to distinguish.
All right, well, we're almost out of time here. Thank you for the discussion today, guys. Do you have a last word there on Brian Mulroney, Peter?
A pretty rotten guy. it kind of evil too, because he was spending a lot of money on expenses. His wife was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he there's a bit here about how much he even cost Canadian taxpayers after he stopped being prime minister and having a being an MP. So, not good, not good at any level.
All right. Thank you so much for the discussion today, guys. We will be back next Monday here on Speak Up. And
no, we won't. It's a holiday. It's Monday.
Oh, you're right. And we're locked out of the building. Which
that's
is
right. So 2 weeks from
2 weeks from today.
Going to have a rerun or something.
Yeah. We'll have something interesting for you next Monday. But we'll be back in person in 2 weeks with more fun talk here on Speak Up. We're going to finish up. We have a public service announcement for you here, and then a track called Getting to the Point, dubbed by Panda Bear and Sonic Boom, coming up at 11 o'clock sharp is Democracy Now! Thanks for tuning in today. This has been Speak Up with your hosts, Magnus Thiebold.
And Peter Raymond Haskell.
And Stephen Fan.
That's me right here. Thank you.
All right.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty, who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.